The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome back to Flight Plan, a show about the New York Jets who are heading to London to take on the Vikings on Sunday. I'm Tim McMaster, along with Zach Rosenblatt, who's also heading across the pond for the weekend. We're going to talk Davante Adams, obviously. Will Joe Douglas pull off this trade? We'll talk more about the coaching staff and kind of push back after last weekend's terrible performance. And a Vikings preview. We'll talk about Sam Darnold and company and who the Jets will be facing on Sunday. Zach, you are leaving for London tonight as we record this thing on Wednesday afternoon. Have you begun packing?
Yes, I did last night. I was really good. And I probably because I don't have enough time today to fully pack. And I'm going to be gone for a week because I'm going with my fiance to Paris for a couple of days after the game since it's a longer delay between game and game because it's a Monday night game, so practice won't be till Thursday essentially. So taking advantage of this like a little mini vacation in the middle of the work week. But yeah, you know, London, as they say in the Lonely Island podcast, foggy London town. I'm excited to get back out there. I've been once before when the Eagles were there in 2018. It's grown a lot since then, but I mean, everybody talks about this, but the thing I remember most about like the game was just everybody wearing different jerseys around. Like for every different team, Eagles fans are like travel very well and they had a huge crowd there. So it felt like an Eagles home game, but it's gonna be really fun. I'm excited to see how much of the Jets fan base is there. I'm excited to do the usual touristy London stuff. You know, we're going to a show on the West End when we get in. We're going to get some afternoon tea one day. We'll hit like, you know, the classics like the London Eye. My fiance wants to go on the London Eye. Not a huge fan of Ferris wheels, I would say. It's not that I'm scared of heights, but like there's no like suspension in a Ferris wheel. You're just kind of like up there. So I don't love those, but I think I'll suck it up and cover. And yeah, we'll hit some of the stuff. I'm not a huge like museum guy, but London's a cool city. Hit some pubs. Wanted to go to the one from Ted Lasso, but it looks like it's a little far out of the way, unfortunately.
Yeah, Richmond is not exactly London. Yeah. When you went before, was that game at Wembley or Tottenham?
It was at Wembley, so I get to see a new stadium, which is kind of cool. Yeah. Although they're practicing like an hour away from where the media is staying, and so that's not going to be a lot. Like a lot of the day is going to get killed by that. But again, I'm not going to complain because I'm there for a work trip technically, but I'm excited to explore a little and just kind of like enjoy London. And again, I think I mentioned the other day, but if our listeners are going, let me know. It'd be cool to grab a pint with some of our Flight Plan listeners.
Yeah, don't look for an IPA though. That's the thing I remember the last time I was in Europe.
I'm not a big beer drinker generally, I would say anyway. So I'd be probably more of a light beer situation.
All right. Davante Adams, let's get right into it. The drama started to escalate on Tuesday morning. He was on Up at Adams with Kay Adams. She referenced that he's missing Aaron Rodgers, and he didn't deny it, said, how could you not, with a big grin. And then after that, in the afternoon, he actually officially demanded a trade from the Raiders, and it's just blown up from there, Zach. There's a lot to get into here. I guess the first thing is, in your mind, how serious are the Jets? Like, is this something where they're like, we're going to do whatever it takes? Is this something where, all right, we'll do it, but not for beyond how we, you know, we rank this package? Like, where do Joe Douglas and company sit on this?
I think they absolutely are in on it. I think they're monitoring the situation. I know that's a like buzzword thing when a guy requests a trade, but I think that there's more factors in it than everybody just like Aaron Rodgers wants him. He's Aaron Rodgers' buddy. They're going to go get him. Everybody's known they were going to go get him. This has been a topic since Aaron came to the Jets, because he was on the list of guys that he wanted when he got here. And they've kind of like jokingly and seriously alluded to the idea of playing with each other again. And Aaron, the night before the Raiders game last year in Vegas, like hung out with Devontae, and there's the whole thing on the golf course this summer. Like, the signs have always been there, and it makes a lot of sense. The Jets in theory are all in, but I there are factors to consider. Number one, the money. I don't have the figure in front of me. I think it's something like 12.5 million,
13.5, I 13 think, and a half. But it would be 12.5 for him right now this week. Right?
Yeah. Each passing week, it'll be less because game checks as they come out. Yeah. If people are confused by that, but that's a lot of money for 13 games, 12 games, whatever it is. Not only that, but it's not just the salary that's going on your salary cap, which you need space for. It's cash. You have to pay him that cash because it's guaranteed salary. And so I'm not 100% sure how ready the Jets are to take on that much money without any like successions or whatever it is, whether it's a contract restructure or the Raiders agreeing to eat some of the contract. Like, these are layers between the Jets and the Raiders coming to an agreement. I don't know. I haven't heard anything about them actually proposing an offer. I know there's been reports about what they're seeking, which is something like a second round pick and other compensation, which is very vague. I think that's probably even aiming high if you just look at the market for these receivers with the big money, early 30s. Like, Stephon Diggs is the name that's been thrown around the league that I think people are expecting. Wherever Devontae lands, it'll probably look like the Stephon Diggs contract, which is pretty much a 3 and a 5 from Houston for him. And then they restructure his deal to make him a free agent after this year. I could see that being a thing that happens with Devontae too, because after this year, his contract is non-guaranteed. And both the cap hits are pretty large. So there would have to be some sort of restructure, I would think, unless you're a team that's okay with it being a one and done or whatever it is. So again, the Jets are absolutely the favorite, I would say. I think they are internally discussing it. I don't think there's been an offer presented. And I think another big factor is other teams are going to be interested as well. I think the thing that Raiders are going to run into is that salary. And a lot of these teams that seem like obvious contenders, the Kansas City Chiefs are the number one. I think the Bills are another one that was thrown around initially. Like, these are teams that don't have a lot of cash to spend right now, I would say. And on the flip side, the idea of the Raiders eating some of the salary, like, the Raiders are pretty cash poor right now. That was like a storyline all offseason. Like, they don't have a lot of money to spend after that move to Vegas. So there's a lot of factors in why I don't think it's going to come to a head like right now. And that kind of goes to another factor that's in my head and I think is accurate. I think Woody is probably going to want to see how this team looks on Sunday and in general coming up, because they're coming off a really bad game. He didn't really want to spend a lot of money this offseason. If you look at the rankings in terms of cash spending the offseason, the Jets are towards the bottom. They did sign, you know, Tyron Smith, Mike Williams, John Simpson, all these guys, the contracts that were initially reported as these like high figures. And as it turned out, they were like way smaller with a lot of incentives, which is not money you have to spend up front. And so I think Joe Douglas had to get creative with the way he structured his deals this offseason, because I don't think Woody wanted to go on a spending spree like he has in recent years. Because the idea that everybody has said in this building and out of it is that they were a quarterback away and the quarterback is back, so you guys should be good enough kind of thing. So I think there are still some layers between it happening. If I had to put money on it, I would say the Jets are the most likely to land him. He, as it's been reported, he wants to play for Aaron Rodgers or Derek Carr again. That's why the Saints have been another. We'll get into the other teams, but it's such an obvious fit. And what the question of whether they should or not, I lean towards yes. If the goal is really to win this year, he's a guy that will come in and upgrade your offense immediately. there's a discussion to be had about whether wide receiver is their biggest need right now, which it, I think it pretty clearly isn't. Defensive end is their biggest need right now. But, you know, this is a kind of player that doesn't usually come available very, I mean, I guess more often than not, these receivers are getting available these days. But yeah, there's just a lot of layers to it. So I don't think it's as simple as, well, he wants to go to the Jets. Aaron Rodgers wants him. They're just going to do it. I think there's a lot more conversations being had and discussions and debate internally about whether it's the right move right now, whether they want to wait, whether they want to see what the market looks like all these kind of things. Like if the price is right, if it's only costing you a 3 and a 5 for an all pro wide receiver, I think that's absolutely worth it. And, but Woody has to be willing to pay the money and Joe Douglas has to be willing to give up whatever it ultimately winds up being.
And the Jets have 2/3. The other teams involved, or the other teams rumored to be kind of in the mix here, even if some of it's speculation. You mentioned the Saints with Derek Carr, the Steelers, the Browns, yep. The Commanders, which I think is intriguing because suddenly Jaden Daniels looks like maybe he's the best quarterback in this rookie class. And so the thought to give him a weapon, that's kind of intriguing. But of that group with the Jets involved, you put the Jets clearly number one. I will also add that Diana had it out there today that she thinks the Jets are kind of like the team that ends up getting it done.
Yeah. And I think her report was like around the league. It's like kind of the expectation that he winds up with the Jets.
Yeah. I shouldn't say she thinks.
Yeah.
It's
Yeah. No, I mean, you're accurate, but yeah, it's so I think that is a very obvious thing that the Jets are very clearly going to be in on this. But yeah, out of those teams, you know, the Saints have always kind of worked their way around the cap. They always are right up against the cap though. So they probably have to maneuver some things. That does make a lot of sense. I think they're way better than anybody expected. You put Davante Adams in there with Chris Olave and Rashid Shaheed, and that's a pretty good trio. Washington is really intriguing to me. And the Steelers, I have my eye on the Steelers because they like were really trying hard to get Brandon Ayuk this offseason. And you don't have to give a long-term commitment to Davante Adams necessarily. Davante might have the ability to somewhat dictate where he goes because he can just be like, I'm not going to renegotiate my contract. And he might look at the Steelers quarterback situation and be like, do I really want to play with like Justin Fields or Russell Wilson? No, I want to play with Derek Carr, Aaron Rodgers. I mean, maybe Jaden Daniels. Washington out of those is the most intriguing to me because they are better than I think anybody expected because of Jaden Daniels. And if you bring Devontae in there, all of a sudden Terry McLaurin's life gets a lot easier. But yeah, I think ultimately if I was ranking likelihood, I'd go 1 Jets, 2 Steelers, 3 Saints, 4 Washington. And maybe there's a team that's acting like they're not going to be in on it that comes back in. That happens sometimes. Or there's a team we're not talking about. I thought of this, and this is not a report or anything. I was intrigued at the idea of the Packers trying to get him back because the Packers, I think, are pretty good. Jordan Love's a good quarterback. Christian Watson's hurt again. You plug Davante Adams in a group of pretty intriguing young receivers, probably the best supporting cast he would have had in Green Bay. I don't know. That's kind of fun to me, but Green Bay probably won't do that. It doesn't seem like the Browns will. Chiefs, Bills, I kind of have the feeling they won't be involved, but Jets, Saints, Washington, Steelers, that foursome makes a lot of sense right now.
It's also the Chiefs don't make sense to me because would the Raiders send him to the Chiefs?
Yeah. Right? Like there's also that for sure.
Arch rival factor. And why would you do that? All right. So that's all the how could it happen, what could it cost, all that stuff. What about this receiver room as a whole? Obviously, Davante Adams comes in. He's wide receiver one. That puts Garrett Wilson in a great position as wide receiver two, where instead of being, you know, having the lockdown corner or double teams on him week after week, which has been happening, it just opens the field up for him. That's obvious. But what about after that? You have Mike Williams and Alan Lazard and Gibson. Like, how did all those guys fit into this offense if you're adding Davante Adams?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those, it's a good problem to have type situations. You would think that most of the time you would want Garrett Wilson and Davante on the field, though this would allow, you know, maybe there's a sort of rotation with Mike Williams and Lazard where Lazard is your running downs guy, he's a better blocker, he's your third down maybe type guy, whereas Mike Williams is your big play guy and you're paying a lot for just to have a guy as a go ball guy. I think Mike Williams is probably better than that, but you know, I think that's a pretty good problem to have. I don't know what Gibson's role winds up being. It would feel like Malachi Corley's role, not really obvious where the snaps would be coming from him. And Saleh's already said that he's behind the eight ball, it seems. So, yeah, you know, I think that's an interesting question. Or, you know, I don't know, maybe the Raiders would want one of those receivers back in the deal. I'm not saying they – I've seen some – it floated, I think, from Raiders fans about the idea of Garrett being, like, in the trade or something, and that's them dreaming. Ooh. It's not happening. I'm sorry, unless you're giving up all your first-round picks for a while. The Jets are not trading Garrett Wilson, so you can put that to bed. But, yeah, I don't know. That would be an interesting factor. And not only that, but, like, you know, the Garrett Wilson discussion is one that's been happening since the summer, but especially after coming off this last game. And the biggest thing, and we talked about this the other day, I think, on our four downs, like, you need to be where Rodgers expects you to be for him to throw you the ball. So would Devontae being there along with Lazard, like, I don't know. I'm curious how that dynamic would look with Garrett. I think it would be fine. And ultimately, Garrett would not be going against only the lockdown corners, as you mentioned. So I think ultimately it would benefit everybody, but it's just something to think about if this trade were to happen, like how the touches are being distributed. Is Aaron favoring Lazard and Devontae and not throwing the ball to Garrett because he's kind of doing his improvisation thing? Like, it's a question to be asked. I don't think it'll be an issue. And I think as Dan just commented, I think it really would free up Garrett quite a bit to a degree that he hasn't experienced in his career so far. But, you know, these are just the things you have to think about in the back of your head.
All right, one more thing on this, and that is great, adding an all-pro receiver, you know, opening things up for Garrett. Like, this all sounds good, but when you look at the game on Sunday, is that the biggest issue? I guess in some ways this is probably great for Joe Douglas because suddenly nobody's talking about Hassan Reddick, right? They're talking about, can they get Devontae Adams? And it's kind of like push the Hassan Reddick negativity to the back, at least for now. I'm sure it's going to come back. Yeah. But you still didn't have any sacks on Sunday. Yep. You still couldn't stop the run on Sunday. Granted, you scored 9 points. So not saying this isn't a need, but there's maybe other things that are standing between this team and a Super Bowl besides Devontae Adams.
Yeah. Like, adding Devontae would make their offensive ceiling would rise, and the passing game, I think that would arguably be the most talented wide receiver group in the NFL, or at the very least one of the best, 5 to 10 best, especially just because Devontae and Garrett are such unique receivers and their route running and their ability to get open and all that stuff. And obviously Rodgers' connection with Devontae. But yeah, ultimately, like, Devontae Adams can't rush the passer, and that's going to be their issue for the entire season unless Joe Douglas acquires a defensive lineman. It is positive news that they got Leckie Fotu back today. He's, in theory, going to help as a run stopper. He's a guy that has not graded out very well in his career. I don't think he's anyone that's going to completely change the course of their season. It's a good body to have because they don't trust these young guys, but excuse me. Yeah, I'm still concerned about the defensive end group, the pass rush. Offensive line of the Vikings is better than the Broncos' offensive line. And so Will McDonald has been good as a pass rusher. His production has been good, but I don't think he's enough, and he's not good in the running game. So ultimately, you'd prefer they go out and get a really good defensive end, but not a lot of teams are dying to get rid of their defensive ends either, unless your name is Hassan Reddick and you're on the Jets technically. But most of these guys are not available. So you get the best players you can and you try and scheme around it. But yeah, wide receiver is not the biggest need. And so do you want to use all your assets up on a position that's not the biggest need? I think that's a fair question to ask.
And they would not include Reddick in this, right? Like, I can't imagine.
I don't think so.
Having any interest in that.
The interesting part about the Reddick side of things is right now he's on the do not report list. And so the Jets in theory have $16.8 million in cap space right now, but a lot of that is money that is not being charged while he's on that list. So if Hassan Reddick decided to show up one day, they don't have any of that cap space anymore. And you have to pay Devontae Adams right now. So they'd have to either find someone to take Hassan Reddick's contract, whether it's the Raiders or somebody else, or they're going to have to start restructuring some guys or extending, you know, a Tyler Conklin, a DJ Reed, like whatever it is and clear out a bunch of cap space, because they really don't have very much cap room right now, even if it looks like it on paper. It's kind of deceiving. And Hassan has made them their ability to like operate week to week right now. They have a little bit of breathing room while he's not here, but the second he shows up, they don't have any cap space. So it's just something to keep in mind too. Like they don't have a lot of money to operate with right now. Again, I know you can maneuver the cap and all that stuff, but when you restructure a contract, usually that involves paying somebody up front with a signing bonus. And not all owners are willing to do that as often as like Howie Roseman does it or how often Mickey Loomis with the Saints does it. So again, just all the things to keep in mind. I still think the Jets are the favorite, but the reason why I don't think it's as like cut and dry as it's the Jets and nobody else is because there are a lot of other factors.
All right, let's move on to some other stuff. Obviously, keep it locked to Zach and Diana Rossini and everybody at The Athletic to keep you up to date on this. The great thing about The Athletic is you have all these different angles covered, right? You have somebody covering all these different teams and hear all that information centralized. All right, we talked about this plenty on Monday. Sunday was not a standout day for the Jets coaching staff. Yeah. The fallout kind of continued into the week. And I mentioned it's becoming like the promote Scoop City section of the podcast. But like Chase Daniel is obviously the co-host along with Diana on Scoop City, our podcast, the podcast at The Athletic. And he had some thoughts about the whole cadence thing. And he was fully supportive of Aaron Rodgers' side, which is like, hold these guys responsible. But I thought he did a really good job in audio form of just explaining it all. So let's take a listen to Chase Daniel and then we can react.
Rodgers gets to the line of scrimmage so early because a lot of the times when he uses cadence, he doesn't even have a play called. So he'll be like on triple count, let's go like strong right 324 Denver, triple count. So he's at the line of scrimmage. Ready, blue 80, blitzing hot. No one, okay. Hey, fake kill, do this. Ready, blue 80, blitzing hot. And on that second one, usually teams only use two, like double count. And so they'll jump. That's why he has the most free play touchdowns in the NFL history. And then so he uses a third one if they don't jump. Why anyway? Said that. So it's literally going through it three separate times. And they had five false start penalties. I totally agree with Aaron Rodgers on this. Keep those guys accountable. They practice it all the time. Nathaniel Hackett, every practice, every training camp practice, they started at OTAs. That's what makes Aaron Rodgers a dangerous quarterback because, quite honestly, not only do you get those three plays, but if you aren't sure as a defender when to go off on the snap, you don't get as good a takeoff, so it makes the job on the offensive lineman a lot easier. So I thought Robert Saleh was talking out of his head on that. Like, I just thought it was ridiculous.
Ridiculous, he said. It came up today. Again, Zach, Robert Saleh speaking to you guys, and the cadence thing came up, and he was very short that it wasn't a story. It was a created story. Maybe that's true, but who created it would be my question, right? Because it was his comment after the game that kind of led to this whole thing. But overall, Saleh, not his friendly, typical self today, right?
It was a very weird, quiet, defiant vibe. And I'm starting to get the sense that whether it's actually been spoken or it's just something that they've all decided. I think it's kind of turned into us versus them mentality, which, you know, maybe sometimes that works. Sometimes us versus them, meaning the media. Like, I feel like they think that the media is out to get them. And I get why some people in the room feel that way. You know, Alan Lazard, you know, in his press conference today, he alluded to media stirring things up. And I think a lot of that has to do with the Garrett Wilson comments that he made on the radio and how, you know, when it was presented on Twitter, it didn't include how the question was asked to him and all that stuff. So I get the frustration with that. But I think Saleh, and again, this is just my read of the situation. I haven't heard directly yet, but I imagine he's frustrated by the outcry from the cadence stuff. But as you said, like, this started because of the way he answered a question about it. Maybe he didn't realize what he said, but he basically said, like, you know, maybe we're not good enough to handle the cadence yet. And so what happens to a reporter, I mean, Connor, took that, asked a question to Aaron, maybe phrased it in a way that was a little different than what Robert said. But ultimately, this is because of what Robert said that he asked the question to Aaron. And so it looked like Aaron's like, you know, defying his head coach. And that's kind of been the topic this week. And then Robert downplayed it and said that, you know, it would create a narrative or whatever. But like it started from his comment. Like, so it, like, as we talk about in this pod over and over again, the messaging it's just always a disaster around here. So it was a very weird energy today. It's not necessarily indicative of anything going to happen on Sunday. I don't know. I think Rex Ryan used to use like the media versus us versus the media as like a shouting point, a rallying cry. And I don't know if that's Robert's goal here or if he's just stating like they keep making me look bad. This is on them. Don't let them tear us apart. Like maybe that's the idea they're going with now, which whatever you got to do to get your guys motivated is whatever. Like if you want to make me the enemy, that's fine. I'm a pretty nice guy, I think. Just weird energy of that press conference today. Like weird. It was as like sullen as I've seen him in a press conference since he's been the Jets coach. And there's been many opportunities for him to be sullen as a Jets coach. And it was just very weird for a Wednesday presser. He didn't really want to answer any questions about the Vikings even. He was just very short. And all that matters ultimately is they go out on Sunday morning, stateside, and they come out from the beginning more prepared and higher energy than they did last game. And if they don't, then all this talk about the media being to blame, it'll die off and everybody will point the finger back at the head coach who has, you know, not done a good enough job so far this season, getting his team ready. So, we're in week five. It is too early to be talking like hot seat and all that stuff, but I think this Vikings game is going to be a pretty important demarcation point on the season. Like if they go out and get killed, we're going to have some interesting conversations after that game. If they're competitive and lose, I think that's more defensible because I think the Vikings are very good. If they win, it kind of turns around, maybe not the season, but it turns things around and the conversation changes quite a bit. It's week to week around here always. They could turn around and get killed by the Bills again, and then we're talking differently. But I really do think that if they go to London and get killed by Sam Darnold, there's going to be some conversations to be had on this podcast and in this building ultimately.
I will say the whole NFL is week to week. Like yes, the Buffalo Bills through what three games look like the best team in the NFL. And then they got destroyed by the Ravens.
Yeah.
It's a week by week league, but I think different teams, fan bases swing emotionally more than others.
And that's what I meant really. Yeah.
Yeah. Top of that scale, Jets, Bears, Eagles, you know,
the Eagles for sure. Bases. Eagles and Jets are the closest comparison, I think, because it's a different kind. I think we've talked about it, but the Eagles have an expectation of success because they've had it. And so when they don't reach it, it's like fire everybody. The Eagles are a disaster this year, to be fair, I think. Whereas the Jets have not reached that mountaintop, but because they keep making the same mistakes over and over and over again. And everybody's just, you know, pushing the boulder up the hill or whatever. So, so hopefully they come out and play good. Cause as I say over and over again, I do not want this team to be bad. I do not want them to be a disaster. I was trying to have a nice chill day, getting ready for London, spent some time with my family, and all the drama happened and the Devontae and the Garrett and all this stuff. So, it's better for everybody when things are good. And so a win on Sunday would be amazing. If they beat the Vikings, like the vibes are going to be fantastic because that's a really good win on foreign soil, no less, against Sam Darnold and Kevin O'Connell, who might be one of the five best coaches in the NFL, and Brian Flores, who might be one of the five best defensive coordinators in the NFL. And like the season, we'll be back on track to where we thought we were after week three. But if they get killed, then, you know, like I said, there's some conversations to be had.
All right, let's use that segue to transition into the Vikings and getting ready for this team. You mentioned the coaching staff, which while the Jets coaching staff consistently gets criticized other than Jeff Ulbrich, it's Hackett or Saleh, it's consistent. The Vikings, exact opposite. O'Connell gets praised more and more each week. While Flores, obviously, things didn't go the way he wanted with Miami as a defensive mind. There's no question that what he's doing is special down there. So let's get into this team. Let's start in the offense because Sam Darnold obviously is a big name this week. He is playing the best football of his career, but it hasn't been perfect. He's turned the ball over seven times, which is the third most in the NFL.
Darnold experience. Yeah.
Yeah, it is what it is, right? He's also had four touchdown games, and they're 4-0. And people early in the season were like, is he an MVP candidate? And I think you can directly take his performance and attribute it to the guy who's calling the plays and the coaching staff, right? Which is frustratingly here, when the Jets are successful offensively, the immediate reaction is, well, Aaron Rodgers must be changing plays and doing stuff, because there's no way that Nathaniel Hackett's offense is creating these opportunities. Whereas in Minnesota, exact opposite. It's like, we're in great hands. The plays are going to be great. They're going to create situations. And one I wanted to bring up was Ted Wynn, who writes for The Athletic and does a lot of breakdowns of plays and schemes and is really into how it all works.
Yeah.
Had a really good breakdown of Justin Jefferson, because let's face it, Garrett Wilson is facing double teams and the top corner every week. So is Justin Jefferson, the best receiver in the NFL. And it doesn't matter. And it's not just because Justin Jefferson's the best receiver in the NFL. It's because O'Connell does things to create openings for him. And that's something that I feel like we're just lacking here at this point, at least.
I mean, look, if Nathaniel Hackett wants to get credit when they have good games, and when they have bad games, he shouldn't call plays where you're calling a fade to Solomon Thomas on third down at the goal line. As I would say, you know, I think that's where the Kevin O'Connell and Nathaniel Hackett discussion ends, because that was just as the days passed, that was just like a bonkers play call. Sorry, what was the question? I got sidetracked thinking about the Solomon Thomas.
I don't even know if there was a question. I was just ranting about the fact that, like, this is what an offense can look like when the coordinator is actually scheming guys
for
open,
sure,
as opposed to just relying on their straight skill set.
Yeah, I think it's 100%. I mean, I think that, you know, the quote from Garrett that kind of blew up because of the content of it, you know, I think whatever the question was, I still think what he said was notable and true and kind of goes in line with the stuff Garrett was saying last year when he was going on rants about, you know, the offense not really adjusting each week and being predictable and stuff like that. You know, I think there's responsibility on Garrett's shoulders for the way he's played and the way he hasn't really gotten open and all that stuff. But ultimately, Hackett has to scheme these guys open. I know there's a part of it that's Rodgers, and, you know, when he gets to the line, he gets to make a lot of decisions on his own too. But yeah, you know, Garrett is too talented to be targeted as infrequently and playing the way he is so far. And on the flip side, like you said, you know, the Jets haven't really had a coach on offense that is just constantly putting his guys in position to succeed the way that Kevin O'Connell does. I mean, look at what he did last year. I know they wound up with 7 wins, which the Jets also had last year, but look at what he did with Josh Dobbs on short notice. It's why we all got a little too talkative about why didn't the Jets go and get Josh Dobbs, because Kevin O'Connell made him look like a legit quarterback for a couple weeks, and then he reverted back to form. But every week, Kevin O'Connell has, no matter who the quarterback is, he has them ready to go, and he highlights their strengths, and he calls plays to get the guys open, and they've done a good job with talent around him. Jordan Addison, Justin Jefferson, Aaron Jones, good offensive line, TJ Hockenson when he's healthy. Like, that's a really solid group, but it starts with O'Connell. And that's a big reason why Sam Darnold is having the year he's having. Like you said, you know, DJ Reed, I asked DJ Reed about Darnold today, and he was very complimentary. He's like, he said he's playing like an MVP caliber guy. He especially does that when he's not getting pressured. If you give Sam Darnold time, I think he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league, is what DJ Reed said. But when you pressure him is when he starts making mistakes. And I think that's, you know, you could say that about most quarterbacks, but I think it's especially true with Darnold, because Jets fans saw it when he was a quarterback for the Jets. Like, he was making, you know, he would make some crazy, he would mix in great throws with some crazy mistakes. You know, he was seeing ghosts that one game. It's the famous quote. The Jets want to make him see ghosts on Sunday, and that's kind of going to dictate their chance of keeping this game close on the defensive side of the ball. And then on offense, if the Jets can handle the Vikings blitz, then they can win this game, or at least stay competitive. So, yeah, you know, I think Kevin O'Connell is going to be anticipating them trying to throw Darnold off to confuse him. I'm guessing Ulbrich's going to blitz more this week than he did last week, because I think that's how you have to get to Sam Darnold. But, you know, there's risks there because Justin Jefferson's going to beat you on the back end. So they're a very challenging opponent. And I thought they were going to be better than people were talking about. I can't say I thought they were going to be 4-0. Like, I thought the Vikings were going to be a borderline playoff team, if not a playoff team, but they might be the favorite to win a division that has the Lions and Packers right now. So it's took a turn real quick, and that's why this game looks a whole lot harder than it did when the season started.
And I think you had this game as a loss anyway. When I think we were split, this was one of like the few games where we were split, where I had them winning, you had them losing. All right. So on the defensive side, you mentioned the blitz and Flores. They lead the NFL with 17 sacks. The DVOA, double the next best team, 34.5. New Orleans is 17.5. They have the players to get to the quarterback. But when you look at how the Jets can attack this defense, where can the Jets have success? And is it through the passing game?
It is. They need to establish the run, though. Breece Hall is a big part of that. Like, they need to get Breece going. We've talked about that. Braylon Allen is going to be a really heavy part of this offense. Robert was asked about playing Braylon more at the goal line, and he kind of like pushed back and said that Breece before this last week was doing great in those situations, and we're not going to like pull away from that. He's not going to tell us that they were going to change it. I think you should be giving Braylon Allen the short yardage plays and let Breece get the rest and try to get him back in a groove. But I think ultimately, if they can establish the run and control the clock, that will open up the passing game. I think the Vikings secondary has been pretty good. I think they haven't been tested a lot because they've been so good up front with Minnesota. But I think Stephon Gilmore at this stage of his career, and Byron Murphy is the other corner, the guy from the Cardinals. Like, I think those guys are maybe a little more beatable than like Patrick Surtain. And you know, their defensive line is pretty good. It's not as good as it was last year. They lost Danielle Hunter, I guess is how you pronounce it. They signed Jonathan Greener this offseason. But I think ultimately it's just about the scheme. It's about matching wits, Aaron Rodgers and Nathaniel Hackett versus Brian Flores, ultimately. And so, you know, I'd like to see some deep shots, like to see Mike Williams get involved, maybe a little more. Getting Garrett Wilson the ball in space and establishing the run are like the two things that the Jets are. I don't think the Jets are going to win unless Garrett has a better game. Would be my analysis. I mean, it's not a hot take, but those two guys need to get going, or one at the very least, one of those two guys need to get going. And if they don't, it's going to be very tough sledding against a really good blitzing team. And you know, you have Olufashinu needs to play better. Tyron Smith needs to play better. It's going to be a similar defensive style they're going against, and it didn't look very good last week. So you hope they learn their lesson.
And they need to be disciplined, right? Like, I mean, if you eliminate a chunk of the penalties, that probably goes a long way.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, the penalties, you know, it's been a problem here for a while. And, you know, look, they weren't having those false start penalties the first 3 weeks. So again, I said this the other day, I'm not as worried about the cadence thing as everybody else is. I think that is one of Aaron's superpowers. You want to keep them on edge. But I think the bigger concern is if your players are on edge, both about the cadence and about the idea that a blitz is coming, which I think they kind of were last week. You need to remove being on edge for at least one of them. Get the cadence thing working. Anticipate the blitz. Have extra blockers if you need them. Jeremy Ruckert, Brendan Bates, they signed to be a blocker. Stop using the Solomon Thomas package. So I think that, you know, keeping Aaron clean and getting those two guys I mentioned involved is going to be the difference in this game.
Thinking of key matchups, key one-on-one matchups in this game, and we tend to lean on the same matchups sort of week after week. But when we were talking about the defense and, you know, you're going to blitz more, but then they have Justin Jefferson, I feel like maybe the key matchup is Sauce and Justin Jefferson, because if Sauce can keep him in check, then maybe those blitzes get to Darnold. Darnold makes a couple mistakes and that could turn the game.
I'm very curious to see if they let Sauce travel a little more than they have. And I think they should. I mean, if Sauce is the player you say he is, then he should be traveling with Justin Jefferson. I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't do that, because Jordan Addison can beat you. He's really good. And you have DJ Reed on, you know, you have those guys on two sides. But like, I don't know, I would have Sauce traveling with Jefferson and the rest of it, use the rest of your talented secondary to handle it. Because Justin Jefferson's going to go in the slot some. And I think Michael Carter II is very good. I don't think he's going to be shutting down Justin Jefferson. So it's, yeah, that's going to be, it's going to be a good matchup. You know, Sasa has mostly won his battles so far this season. I know he got a lot of flack for that one game where he left for 10 snaps and he gave up that big pass against the Titans, but he wants to be taken seriously as like a Patrick Surtain type guy. Like he needs to, this is a kind of, you're not going to, like we talked about, you're not going to stop Justin Jefferson. You just have to slow him down. If Justin Jefferson gets 70 yards against you, that's a good thing. Like, cause this is a guy that can wreck your game. He's that good. There hasn't been that many receivers in recent years that have been as good as like just impactful as Justin Jefferson. He's a big reason why they're 5-0 or 4-0. Sorry. Like the fact that they're 4-0, like if they don't have Justin Jefferson, I don't know if that they are. So, he's a stud and it's going to be a big that and, you know, winning their matchups up front. We're going to, like you said, it's going to be the same stuff every week because they have like such obvious specific holes, but that Vikings offensive line is pretty good. They have Christian Darrisaw, Brian O'Neill are their tackles. They're both solid. Their center Garrett Bradbury is pretty good. Will McDonald needs to get pressure. Quinnen Williams needs to get pressure. They need to get to Sam Darnold. Like that's it. Like if you don't pressure him, he's going to dice you up.
All right, you're leaving tonight.
Yes.
What's the plan for the Jets team? Obviously, you have to adjust the time zones. There's a lot to figure out before you kick things off on Sunday because going by their current time zone clocks, right, kickoff's 9:30 a.m. So you have to get past that into a place where it feels like the afternoon.
Yeah, I think they're flying in, I believe, on Thursday after practice. I'm blanking now. Yeah, the Thursday they're getting in. I know they're getting in Friday and basically going straight to practice. And the practice is in the early afternoon in London. So they're flying out. God, I can't believe I can't remember. But yeah, they land Friday and they're basically going straight to where they're practicing. So I think they do that on purpose. So they're not changing their routine. Like I think they're trying to make their bodies be on the same clock as that if they were in New Jersey is the idea. So and they'll leave right after the game on Sunday, I believe. So that's kind of how the schedule is going to go. I'm going to be there at their practice on Friday. I imagine
so you're not going to see Aaron Rodgers in Paris. After.
I
won't.
I mean, maybe I'll go to Paris after and get some snails. I don't know. I know I will be getting them. But yeah, so it's going to be interesting. Like I said, London is a lot of fun. And I think the Jets and Vikings, this is much better matchup than usually these games are for London. It's usually some crappy, it's like the Jaguars and some other crappy team usually or like the 9:30, there's always weird stuff happening and there will be for this. Vikings Jets feels like a fun one, especially with all the storylines and also underrated thing. Like the last time Rodgers was in London was with the Packers in 2022 against the Giants. And that's when he hurt his hand and that kind of affected him the rest of that season. So a lot of storyline, sorry, a lot of storylines. And the Jets need they probably need a win, but at the very least, they need to keep it close.
Yeah, I think they need a win. I mean, 2-3.
With the Bills coming up and the Steelers, yeah.
That doesn't feel like a good place to be. All right, well, we'll be watching, Zach. I'll look for you in the if they show the press box, we'll see if we can find you. Enjoy things on the other side of the pond, get some fish and chips and all fun stuff. And we will have a full recap, I think Sunday is what we're thinking because of your travel plan. So at some point on Sunday, we'll get back on and do the Four Downs podcast. Thanks to everybody for tuning into this one. We'll keep bringing you the latest on Devontae Adams and everything else. Thanks for watching Flight Plan.